The Ravens make a splash in the wide receiver market while the Texans lose a pass catcher. Jaden Daniels pulls away from Caleb Williams in the rookie of the year race. And the Lions continue their scorched earth trial. This is the Fumble Rooski podcast. It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has three touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that six or seven spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome to the Fumble Rooski podcast by Power 88 and Secret Weapon Consulting. I'm Adam Wright. With CJ Medeiros and Chris Kostich, we have a great show planned for you guys today. We're going to be covering a pretty big trade made with the Baltimore Ravens, picking up Deontay Johnson. We're also going to get into the Texans, who lost yet another pass catcher this season. We're going to get into the state of the Offensive Rookie of the Year race between Jaden Daniels and Caleb Williams, where Daniels pulled a little bit further ahead. We're going to get to the Lions, who hung a 50-burger on the Titans defense. And now for the third game in four matchups, have scored 40-plus points, winning their fifth straight. And joining us to cover all of these topics, we have a special guest, a longtime listener of the show, Aaron Wise. Aaron, thanks for joining.
You're muted.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yep, my bad. I didn't know I was muted.
Well, thanks for joining. Pleasure to have you. I see your as I've noticed in from episodes past, you happen to be a Jets fan who is, I imagine, not happy with certain circumstances.
I'm done.
No words on that. All right.
Cool. We can talk more about that later.
Understandable. We'll have plenty of words for that. But we're going to get into the big news of just a few minutes ago as we are recording this on 2:45 at 2:45 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Baltimore Ravens have traded Deontay Johnson in what was also a pick swap, a fifth for a sixth. So the Ravens, they already had a few very good pass catchers. They had Zay Flowers. They had Rashad Bateman. They had Mark Andrews. And now here they're trading for Deontay Johnson. It's also worth noting that we talked a lot about this team on our last Tuesday episode. We gushed over the Ravens saying that their quarterback, Lamar Jackson, is having the best season of his career. Well, they went on to lose 29-24 right after we said it and just hours after we posted it as a reel. Not that Lamar played poorly, but it's also worth noting that the wide receiving core did not have its best showing. Yes, Zay Flowers caught 7 balls for 115 yards, but they had a lot of drops in this game. So it makes sense that that would correlate with a few days later trading for a wide receiver in Deontay Johnson. Is he a number one? Not really. Maybe a low tier one at best. Their best wide receiver is obviously Zay Flowers. But I think when you look at it, I think this is a very good trade for the Ravens, who have taken on more of a pass-heavy approach to their game this season. And to continue with that identity, this just matches up with it. But, guys, what are your thoughts?
I wouldn't really say the Ravens are going with a pass-heavy approach since you got Derrick Henry in the backfield, but it definitely helps that you bring in Deontay Johnson. As you mentioned, though, I think that he's going to serve more of his wide receiver, too. And since Adam Thielen was out, he's had to serve as a wide receiver one on the Panthers and led the team in receiving yards, receptions, receiving touchdowns. So he's definitely had to step up in the game a little bit with Thielen being out for basically since the beginning of the season, or since week two, actually. So all in all, I mean, Deontay Johnson has shown that he can be a wide receiver one and can be a serviceable wide receiver two as well. obviously more on the wide receiver two side. And I mean, the Ravens need to kind of stack up a little bit on the pass catchers. Cause I mean, yeah, you got Zay Flowers. He's pretty solid. Isaiah Likely is starting to come into his own. Mark Andrews getting a little bit older, but now he's starting to get more into the offense a little bit. Rashad Bateman is all right. Nelson Agholor is still kind of a bum. So I think this is a good little add-on for the Ravens to have for this little Super Bowl push that they're going to put themselves on. But at the end of the day, though, the Ravens are still going to be a run-heavy team, and it's really going to come down if they panic in the playoffs or not, which they always seem to do.
All right, CJ.
For me, I know I said this about Derrick Henry, but this just reinforces the point. This move for me screams all in for the Ravens, right? So Deontay Johnson, his stats won't wow you, mostly because he's on that trash heap called the Carolina Panthers, and their circus master owner there, David Tepper. But look, 30 catches, 357 yards, 3 touchdowns. I know they have Flowers and Bateman, who are both 2 first-round picks. They have Mark Andrews, and even a really good tight end, too, and Will Likely, or Isaiah Likely, I'm thinking of someone else, who could be tight end one, depending on who you ask. But, like I said, you got to like this trade for Johnson. Because I know they're trying to lean more on the pass game, but this is great because it takes the pressure off of Derrick Henry. Right? So you don't have to live in fear of running Derrick Henry into the ground or forcing Lamar to scramble 20 times a game. So that's, Derrick Henry's that punch you need when you have teams on the rope. So you're trying to get a few more first downs to ice the game. I'm not saying you relegate him to that role, but you're just taking more off his plate. And that is great because health is the name of the game. Injuries are now the only thing that can stop the Ravens. It's just, I would have also preferred they make a trade on the defensive side of the ball because, good Lord, their defense has been iffy. Despite the star power they have, I'm not thrilled with it. But as long as they keep adding, they should be fine. And I'm not going to pretend that Deontay Johnson comes in and becomes wide receiver one. But you've got a solid trio of Flowers, Johnson, and Bateman. Overall, it's a net negative for the Ravens. I do say so.
Aaron?
All right, so what do I think about the trade? Honestly, I mean, it's pretty good for the Ravens. You know, makes their offense more balanced. So you won't see Lamar Jackson running like crazy every game, and Derrick Henry could like chill a little bit. But yeah, I think this trade honestly might put them over the chap to beat the Chiefs, which I hope so. So yeah, there's not really too much here to say really about this trade. I think it was just a win now move for the Ravens, which I honestly think they've been win now mode for years now. So yeah, that's all I gotta say with the Ravens.
Yeah, listen, this just makes them a very balanced team. I say pass heavy. I say more pass heavy as far as like relative to the two recent years with the Ravens. They've always been a run first offense. That's what they have been ever since they brought in Lamar Jackson. They've been a run heavy team, rightfully so, because you're playing to his strengths. However, I think we're starting to realize as his career goes on that he can also throw a little bit too. So they've been surrounding him with some pass catchers. They've given him Zay Flowers. They also have Rashad Bateman. They have Isaiah Likely as well. They have Mark Andrews. They have a lot of good players, but they're just adding to it, and they're giving him Deontay Johnson as well. And I think this makes him a little more balanced. And this helps Derrick Henry because he's not facing stacked boxes. They have to pick their poison now. It's either you allow Lamar Jackson to beat you with his arm or legs, or you have Derrick Henry, who's going to be plowing through you. You can't win in that scenario. And this is going to be a hard offense to beat. And it's going to be interesting to see how it works with all of these different playoff teams who will probably be running into them at some point this season or in the postseason on how they're going to try and stop them, because they're pretty hard to stop right now. That being said, they did lose to the Browns with Jameis Winston. Good game from Jameis Winston, but you know, you can't win them all. All right. With that being said, we talk about the Ravens who gained a wide receiver. We're going to talk about the Texans who lost one. That's going to be next. This is the Fumble Rooski podcast. It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that 6 or 7 spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome back to the Fumble Rooski podcast by Power 88 and Secret Weapon Consulting. Adam Wright, CJ Mineros, Chris Kosich, and special guest Aaron Wise. All right, so the Houston Texans won yet again. They have improved to 6-2 on the season. They continue a pretty good campaign so far. They barely edged out the Indianapolis Colts 23-20. However, it came with a price. They lost their prize acquisition from over the offseason in Stephon Diggs, who they lost to an ACL tear, we found out just a few minutes ago. It was suspected earlier this week that he did tear his ACL. That is what it was feared after getting results back as of just, what was it, an hour ago? This is, it is currently 2:55 p.m. Eastern time. They lost Stephon Diggs, and they've already been without Nico Collins, and they will be until at least week 10. And that's if Collins is ready. So right now, you're looking at a weapons arsenal for Stroud that is quickly starting to dwindle after they were coming out of the ears with targets. You had Diggs, Collins, you had Tank Dell, Dalton Schultz. Now it's down to Tank Dell and Dalton Schultz, just those two. That's dwindling quite a bit. Tank Dell might be a wide receiver one. That's still kind of in question. He had a really good season last year, and so far he's been iffy, but a lot of that could be just the fact that he hasn't been getting the targets because it's been a crowded pass-catching core. Now that depth is almost gone, and your top three targets, as far as skill positions go, are Tank Dell, Dalton Schultz, and Joe Mixon. And you also have Damian Pierce, who could give the ball to every now and then. Playing behind a pretty good offensive line you still have. And CJ Stroud is still a very good quarterback who has shown that he can do more with a little bit less. He did that last year. There's a possibility he could do that now. But I'm just going to ask you guys, how do we feel about the Texans being the Super Bowl contender that we have propped them up to be during this season and over the offseason?
I feel like I just haven't been that impressed with the Houston offense this year. It doesn't feel like the offense that we saw from last year where they were just going balls to the wall. Everything was a shootout. And it was a high-flying, exciting offense. It just does not seem like that again this year. They've only cracked over 30 points once this year, and that was against the Patriots where they won 41-21. Other than that, they've cracked over 25 points one time, and that was against the Colts week one. It's not been a very impressive offense, and I know that they have the Jets coming up on Thursday night, and the Jets defense hasn't been good at all by any sense of the word this year. So they might have themselves an all right time against the Jets Thursday night, but I don't really see this offense performing all that well for the next few weeks, especially with Lord knows when Nico Collins is actually going to be back.
So when I look at this Texans team, they ran into the opponent that no one can beat, injuries. And even before that, they kind of remind me of last year's Jaguars in the sense that, sure, their record at this point in the year was good. Sure, they were winning, but they just – and I don't care. All these stat freaks are going to crucify me for this, but I don't care. they're not passing the eye test. And I know they could say, oh, but there's no data behind the eye test. But, like, I don't know. They're just – they felt so vulnerable. These aren't blowouts, you know, that they're that we're accustomed to for these – for this usually high-flying team. These are games that they're just grinding out. And now a tough job's going to get tougher because you already lost Nico Collins. But now you've lost Stephon Diggs. And worse yet, this is for the year. And as far as Nico Collins goes, I think he's eligible to come back like week 10. Thing for the Texans is maybe he comes back by week 10. Maybe they extend his stay. But at barest of minimums, you're going to get him back. In the meantime, your wide receiver one is going to be Tank Dell. And then you've got, I don't know, like I think John Mechie. And they're solid, but you might have to lean on Dalton Schultz more. You might have to lean on Joe Mixon more. Like I said, I know they were never passing the eye test, but Houston just got a bad roll of the dice. Let's be honest. I mean, literally wide receiver one and two are hurt with Diggs, who's arguably the two, being done for the year. Like I said, I don't think of anyone who can really beat injuries when they're affecting this many players and it's this widespread. They've already been banged up before. Like Joe Mixon missed like 5 weeks. They've been chewing through running backs until Mixon came back. So, yeah, it's just, like I said, just like a bad roll of the dice. But when Collins gets back, things should turn around, hopefully.
Aaron?
All right. If I'm being honest here, I never saw the Texans as a legit Super Bowl threat at all, really. I just seem just as a playoff team that's just there. You know, they might win a game and then lose. That's probably what's going to happen. But I know this might sound crazy. I still think the Jaguars are going to win the division, man. Something's just telling me they're going to win the division. I know it's crazy. Okay? I know it's crazy. But the Texans are going to fall apart. Yeah, they got the Jets this week, okay? The Jets. They're probably going to beat the Jets, and then that's when the collapse is going to happen. CJ Stroud is a good quarterback, you know. I think he'll figure out a win to win at least, I don't know, maybe a few more games, but Stephon Diggs is definitely gonna hurt their passing game a decent amount. I know I'm all over the place right now, but yeah, that's all I got to say with the Texans, though, on that.
Yeah, listen, they haven't been quite as good as I thought they would be, but I still feel they've been fine as far as – I don't think they've been as bad as at least as underwhelming as the Jaguars were last year. That was really bad last year. I mean, Trevor Lawrence was – egregious. Even during the span where they were 8-3, I just felt this, just something seems off. And sure, it's the same way with the Texans a little bit, but they at least look like they're fulfilling what they were supposed to be. For the most part, they're doing the bare minimum is what I would say. The Jaguars weren't quite where we wanted them to be. The Texans are just right there. They're like, yeah, they're there. They're winning games. They look fine. They don't look unconvincing. They just don't look as good as they were supposed to be, which is fine. Like, I get it. But now we're getting to a point you need to elevate your play because you're losing players left and right. It's at a point where you can't just flip the switch whenever. Stephon Diggs is not going to be with you the rest of the season, and maybe not in a Texans uniform for the rest of his career since it's a one-year deal. And Nico Collins is gone until at least week 10. At least. That doesn't mean he's going to be ready by then. So it could take him significantly longer. Who knows? And he could re-injure himself. Who knows? But Tank Dell, Dalton Schultz, Joe Mixon, that's going to have to be enough for CJ Stroud. He's going to have to show that he can do more with less here. Because I'm not quite sure if they have enough.
Expect Mixon to get over 30 touches a game now.
Basically,
yeah, they might have to go a little more run heavy.
I mean, we already saw it last week. He had 25 carries against the Colts for 102 yards and a touchdown. I mean, he's been a very probably the biggest part of the Texans offense, in my opinion, is Joe Mixon. And he's going to end up being a way bigger part of that now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like they're going to have, they have no choice. They can't play pass heavy anymore because they just don't have the targets to do it. But they have some personnel there. There's still players left. Nico Collins should be back soon. So, I think the Texans still have as good a chance as anybody in the AFC to come out and represent in the Super Bowl. So we'll see. This is going to be a very interesting stretch for the Texans here. With that being said, I want to get to the, we've touched on a couple NFC teams. Want to get to the NFC, a couple juicy storylines, one involving the Lions. But right now, up next, we're going to talk about the Offensive Rookie of the Year race and what was probably one of the most anticipated games between a Washington team and a Bears team in recent memory. You usually think that's a game that's just like an afterthought, just a backwash game where it's like, okay, there's football on. Even a Thursday night football game. But in this one, it was a little, there were some more storylines to it. And it kind of lived up to the hype in an ugly way. That's next. This is the Fumble Rooski Podcast. It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that 6 or 7 spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome back to the Fumble Rooski Podcast by Power 88 in Secret Weapon Consulting. I'm Adam Wright. CJ Medeiros, Chris Kostich, special guest Aaron Wise. All right, so the Washington Commanders beat the Chicago Bears 18-15, and we hyped this. This was almost our game of the week, but because Jaden Daniels was uncertain to play, we opted with Bills and the Seahawks, which was also a dud, but. The big story of this matchup was that both teams were 4-2 and 5-2. They were outdoing themselves as far as the season has gone so far. And they have the two front runners for Offensive Rookie of the Year. These two were, as far as the betting odds went, 200 points apart. So they were right there with each other, and it was within margin of error. And Caleb Williams was noticeably behind going into this game. This one kind of gave it a little bit. This gave Jaden Daniels a little bit more space. And it's not that bad because they both played pretty poorly. Don't be fooled by these statistics from Jaden Daniels. 326 yards and a touchdown, 21 for 38. Caleb Williams was significantly worse. But most of these stats from Daniels were from that one Hail Mary play, which was an incredible play as far as just the entertainment standpoint goes. As far as talent goes, let me tell you something about the Hail Mary. It is a play that is, in my opinion, the most overrated play in sports.
Shut the fuck up.
Whoa, Chris. Hang on a second. Let him finish.
Hang on a second. All of this requires is arm strength. Just get it into the end zone with some arc. And at that point, it's a prayer. That's why it's called a Hail Mary. So like, and it's this, and on this particular play, it bounced over the pile. It ricocheted off the pile and right into Noah Brown's hands. And listen, I'm not going to pile on Jaden Daniels. This is exactly what you're supposed to do. But if anything, it would be a problem if he didn't make it to the end zone. That's my issue there. It's a luck play. And this one in particular was the most lucky. Now, we can talk about how Tyreek Stevenson was celebrating before the play even happened. That was stupid, egregiously bad. But let's not act like the Hail Mary play is the easiest play in football to defend. All you have to do is stand there in the end zone and bat it away. And they couldn't do that. That was a big problem.
It's no, shut up. No, just shut up. Just shut up. I'm sorry, but you can't just say that the Hail Mary is the easiest thing to or the easiest thing to defend because you just have to bat it away. Tyreek Stevenson is the reason why they practice. It's not like you go out and do a Hail Mary all willy-nilly. You actually practice what you're doing on a Hail Mary. The right. offense practices where everyone's going to go. The defense practices. It's not like you're going out there and getting out into a huge bunch. The defense is actually getting on a man. And the reason why, like, the Tyreek Stevenson thing is so brutal is because, A, he's taunting the fans as the play is going on, and B, he's not getting his body on a man, which is why Noah Brown is bare-ass in the back of the end zone when the ball gets deflected. I'm sorry. I can't be with you on this one. That's the
Hail Mary play, it is a luck play. You cannot dispute that.
It's a luck play, but the defense still has to make a fucking play. It's still hard. It's still hard for the defense to...
Of course you have to practice it. You have to practice everything, but that doesn't make it any less of a luck play. Of course,
yeah, it's a luck play, but the defense still has to go out and make a play. It's still a hard play to defend because anything can happen. You got to, at the very least, bat it out of the end zone, and that's hard enough to do when you got 20 sets of hands going in on the ball.
May I interject?
Yeah,
take here. So, I don't know. This was the game that regardless of who won was going to really tip the offense rookie of the year race a certain direction. You know, I mean, you know how these tip games can go. No offense to Tyreek Stevenson. But I just... Like you said, I know a lot of that came from that Hail Mary. It's just, but Caleb Williams did not look good. Jaden Daniels looked all right. I mean, better than that. It was a really ugly game and with a really awesome ending. But yeah, Jaden Daniels is the rightful front runner as it sits now. And barring a collapse, it should be his to lose. And I mentioned that the media, they might be all seeing, but I promise you they are not all knowing. And I mentioned this, and I said, like, whoever wins this game is probably going to end up winning Offensive Rookie of the Year because barring, like, a massive collapse from Daniels, even if they finish neck and neck, they're going to say, yeah, but Daniels won the head-to-head. And that's probably how it's going to be. So unless Caleb Williams becomes, like, Tom Brady and Jaden Daniels just falls off a cliff or injuries or anything like that, then it should go to Daniels because that was the real storyline in this game. And a note on Hail Marys. You can talk about luck. You can talk about whether or not they practice it. Well, yeah, I mean, obviously they do practice it. That is what, I don't know, practice is for. But when it comes to luck, how often do we see the Tyreek Stevensons of the world, this world-class jackass, taunting the fans instead of getting up and getting on his man? This rarely happens. I would say it never happens. No one has that much of a mental lapse, and his mistake directly contributed to that Hail Mary. In fact, I am confident in saying if he gets his shit together, more likely than not, that goes incomplete. And by the way, Adam's right about it being arm strength. I mean, look, they look nice. And, you know, you have the Aaron Rodgerses of the world that just says, screw it. Someone's down there somewhere, because that's what it is. You're not angling for a guy. You're just hoping your guy can make the play. And Chris, you played quarterback in high school, wherever you played quarterback. And I respect that. I do. But I would be remiss if I didn't note that the ball did not make it to the end zone. It was tipped directly into the hands of Noah Brown. That is all.
Okay, and not many other quarterbacks are throwing it from their own, can throw it from their own 35 or 30 to make it to the goal line. That's not your everyday quarterback. Jaden Daniels can't throw it. He did say he can throw it about 70 yards. I don't know if he...
I'm not debating that. I'm just saying, I'm not going to debate that it's tough, and I'm not going to debate that it's something they practice. But if it's really as, like, common as you think it is, why don't they succeed more often?
No, I'm not saying I'm not I'm not disagreeing that, like, yeah, the Hail Mary is a lot of luck, but there's still a lot that goes into the Hail Mary play itself. And to say that it's overrated, in my opinion, is just a slap in the face to football itself.
I will say this, though. I do agree it is luck-based. I do take offense with it saying overrated. Look, Adam, I get where you're coming from, but how is it overrated if it's rare? Like, when you see a successful Hail Mary, God damn it, that's one of the coolest things in the game. Like, I mean, to see that final, like, last-second walk-off miracle, I've always thought it was cool. So, like, I don't know how it's overrated. I mean, yeah, in a lot of cases, there are quarterbacks that have said it's like, screw it, it's down there somewhere. But it doesn't make it just any less interesting, because that's what it is. It's about the showmanship. It's about the big fireworks ending. Like, I don't get how that's overrated, especially given the fact that it is exceedingly rare.
If you think the Hail Mary is overrated, you have to look at it through
an entertainment standpoint. Yeah, it's a fun play to watch. But if you think it's like anything other than luck, then I think that's a little overrated. Yeah, especially since it's a tiny part of the game. It's the last play of the game, and most of the vast majority of the time, it doesn't work. So it's a very entertaining play. I'm not disputing that. It's extremely entertaining. It's thrilling. But if you're this is the problem I have with the Hail Mary is that it's like a skill play. Everyone looks at Aaron Rodgers and they say, well, Aaron Rodgers is the best at throwing Hail Marys. Well, yeah, he has the arm strength to get it there. That's great and all. But that just makes him a great thrower of the football. It's literally F it. Devontae Adams is up there somewhere. That's all it is.
I mean, I'll give you that. That
makes it overrated, though. It is, but that is literally the point of a Hail Mary. I don't think that makes – I think, low-key, this is going to sound stupid, but I genuinely think you're both right. You're both wrong, but you're both right. I mean, like, yeah, it is – I wouldn't call it overrated, but it is luck, and I just think that's what makes it cool.
Well, yeah, that makes it cool, and I'm completely not disputing the fact that it's a very entertaining play. I love watching that play. But if we're going to talk about, like, if this is a testament to skill of Jaden Daniels, this was a luck play. It ricocheted, didn't even make it to the end zone, ricocheted off the pile and into Noah Brown's hands because of blown coverage by dumbass Tyreek Stevenson.
Yeah, I mean, no one's admitting that it's a Jaden Daniels thing. I don't even think Chris said it was a Jaden Daniels thing.
Well, I was saying it's not a Jaden Daniels thing. That's the point I was making.
Well, you can say that without saying you could say that without saying the Hail Mary is overrated.
Literally, like that was the reason we were like, huh?
Because no one here said
it was a Jaden Daniels thing. You're attacking points we don't have.
Points that you don't have. I was saying that it's a luck based play. So therefore it's a little overrated. And
all right. Whatever, Aaron.
Okay, there we go. yeah, I was trying to say so, but I couldn't say that. I was trying to stay awake because I was drinking some bubblers. But okay, anyways, so that dude that didn't get his man to Hail Mary, I'm gonna be honest with this. That's honestly something that the Jets would do. That's like a Jet, like they would talk trash and then get burned. So, but yeah. I do think the Hail Mary is a luck play because like 1% of the time, like there's like a whopping 1% chance that's gonna get completed. So there's a 99% chance it's not gonna happen. Just like the onside kick. Like the onside kick like almost never happens now. So I mean it is what it is. Like sometimes so too, when you win football games, sometimes you need some luck to happen. I mean it happens. So Jaden Daniels, it happened. He won. It was crazy. I saw it at the gym live, which was kind of insane. I didn't think that was going to happen. I thought the Bears had it in the bag. But right now, though, Jaden Daniels, in my opinion, right now is going to win the Rookie of the Year race, like Offensive Rookie of the Year. I think he's going to be better than Caleb Williams. Caleb Williams looked – I'll be honest, though, too. Like, Jalen Daniels had way more better games this year so far than Kid Williams. Kid Williams had too many games where he looked absolutely, like, abysmal, like just buds. I know the game on Sunday, he did come back a little bit, did took the lead, and then we also could talk about week one where Kid Williams, I know he's just a rookie, I know it's his first game, but he did absolutely nothing to help help the Bears beat the Titans. It was basically all defense, and Will Levis is doing Will Levis stuff. But, yeah, I do believe Jalen Daniels will win the Rookie of the Year this year over Caleb. But overall, though – oh, yeah, one last thing. But overall, though, it was a good game if you're, like, a defensive guy. If you're, like, a defense, you like, you know, all that nastiness, like, low scoring, and that's probably the game for you. But, all right, that's it. That's all I got to say.
I will say, though, like, actually talk about the game and not a freaking Hail Mary. Actually talk about the game itself. Caleb Williams played three really shitty quarters of football and showed up in the fourth quarter when it mattered most. The thing with this Bears defense, and they've kind of shown this the entire season, is that the defense is going to keep this team in the game for every single game this year. And that has been utmost fact for, I'd say, pretty much every single game. Now it's just a matter of Caleb Williams actually showing up now. But yeah, Jaden Daniels, both quarterbacks did not have the greatest games, but Jaden Daniels by far did put himself further ahead in the offensive rookie of the year race. I think everyone can agree on that. But if we're going to throw in another storyline, Matt Eberflus needs to be fucking fired. And I think everyone knows that, because Tyrick Stevenson thing, yeah, we can say that he's a dipshit for that, but that's a Matt Eberflus problem. That is wholeheartedly a Matt Eberflus problem.
Two different drives in the fourth quarter where Caleb Williams actually started to figure it out and actually looked a little bit like he has been in the last three games, where they one of which they should have had a touchdown. The next one they did score. That was just ridiculous. And it's at a point like, yeah, I mean, coaching is an issue, but I think I'm more encouraged by the fact that Caleb Williams was able to figure it out a little bit. He didn't just roll over in the face of a bad game. I preach this all the time on this show. It's that don't judge a quarterback by how he does on his good days, because everyone on a good day, everything's going to go your way. On a bad day, how do you respond to it? How do you respond to that adversity? And I thought Caleb Williams, he answered it pretty well. Am I saying that he's better than Jaden Daniels? No. Jaden Daniels is probably going to win Offensive Rookie of the Year. Who ends up having a better career? Who knows by now? But overall, if you are a fan of either team and you looked at your quarterback, you were probably encouraged in some way, shape, or form. Because the future of the league is very bright as far as this draft class goes. We've already discussed this plenty of times each and every week. This rookie class looks very good. Caleb did not have the best game, but he responded well. He responded to the adversity. And so did Jaden Daniels. Only problem is, I just think his stats are slightly padded. In fact, not slightly. 52 of those yards were off the Hail Mary and a touchdown pass, making it look like he had an amazing game, which is just not true. And up until that final play, the Commanders didn't even score a touchdown. They were up. They scored 12 points off field goals. So just overall a very disappointing game. I thought it was underwhelming. It lived up to the hype in the sense that it was a good game because it was competitive, but it was more so both teams were not playing very well. I'm very excited about the future of these two teams, but I'm also underwhelmed by the game itself. It was a victory at the end of the game, but based on one team's mistake, based on a little bit of luck, and both teams did not play to their fullest potential. So pretty mixed bag here, I would say.
Yeah. Back to the coaching point though, I did see one person on Twitter say, and I agree with this, the Commanders right now is what people thought the Bears were going to be this year. And not to say the Bears aren't having a good season, but the Commanders are far and away been performing a lot better than the Bears. years, I feel like. And just looking at the press the post-game presser for both Dan Quinn and Matt Eberflus. Matt Eberflus basically discrediting the three or so plays prior to the Hail Mary, and Dan Quinn praising the three plays prior to the Hail Mary. The three plays that got them within range to at least have a shot at throwing this ball. And that, I think that's wholeheartedly the difference. One coach discrediting a game of inches, and the other coach that is hammering down the importance of how the importance of those three plays.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we should expect better football from both teams going forward. This was overall an ugly game for both sides. The only reason this was a competitive game is because both teams played poorly. So in a weird way, it was still an entertaining game, which was kind of funny to watch. And the fact that we raised this point for other teams. It's in other matchups. It's whoever wanted to lose the most, or whoever, I forget what exactly we said. It's like whoever wanted it less, whatever it was. That was kind of what it felt like in this game. It's like Jaden Daniels was playing poorly. He was starting drives very well, but he was finishing them with merely field goals. Caleb Williams was throwing passes behind guys' backs. If you remember that one viral play where there was a wide open guy from behind the line of scrimmage, overthrew him by 10 feet. Just an overall really ugly game. So I think we should expect better football going forward. But speaking of better football, let's talk about another team in the NFC. We're going to get to the Detroit Lions, who just don't know how to lose. In fact, they don't know how to lose by more than three scores. That's next. This is the Fumble Rooski podcast. It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has three touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that six or seven spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome back to the Fumble Rooski podcast by Power 88 and Secret Weapon Consulting. I'm Adam Wright. With CJ Medeiros, Chris Kostich, special guest Aaron Wise, I want to talk a little bit more about the Detroit Lions, because we've praised them a lot this season in talking about a few blowouts that they have been a part of, but they just keep doing it. And it's not just the fact that the Lions beat the Titans 52-14, that they dropped a 50 burger on this Tennessee team, a defense that's actually pretty decent this year. I mean, their offense is something else, but as far as offense goes, holy crap. So 52 this game. They dropped 31 against the Vikings, who have been this year one of the better defenses in the league. They dropped 47 at AT&T Stadium against the Cowboys. And then they scored 42 on the Seahawks. They've won their fifth straight. They continue to win. And I think the most intriguing part of it is that they dropped 52 while not asking for much from each team player individually. Nothing was placed on one guy, right? Jared Goff may have thrown for three touchdowns, but he only passed for 85 yards. Jahmyr Gibbs had 127 rushing yards. He had one touchdown, but I mean, if you look at what David Montgomery has done, he has two total touchdowns in this game. Amon-Ra St. Brown only had seven receiving yards, but he caught a touchdown. Khalif Raymond had two total touchdowns. One of them was on a punt return. Another one was on a touchdown reception. Sam Laporta was their lead receiver with 48 receiving yards, and he caught a touchdown. So it's like, pick your poison. It's like, you don't have to place everything on one guy with this team. They're continuously winning by a team effort. They find different ways to beat different teams, and they're dropping a ton of points on them, and it seems like they're making it look effortless. This isn't just a revenge tour. This is a pull your pants down and stare at you, laughing, pointing type of campaign. This has been one of those types of seasons so far for the Lions. They're on a revenge tour. Guys, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the coffin with the team part, because this was the existential definition of a team win, right? 52 points, and just looking solely on special teams, because special teams is the most forgot about thing in football sometimes. And it's one of the most important aspects of football, because it can flip field position like a motherfucker. I mean, Khalil Dorsey had one kick return. He took it 72 yards without even scoring. Khalif Raymond, 90-yard punt return for a touchdown. He had 190 yards total, which means that the other four, he's averaging about 25 yards per punt return on the other four returns, which is pretty insane in itself, right? So, if you're able to flip the field position like that, there's going to be a reason why Jared Goff only has 85 yards, and it's because the Lions offense getting set up with amazing field position, along with two interceptions that the Lions got as well for 41 extra yards. There's another flip in field position right there. It's like special teams was on display in this game, and at this rate, I don't see a reason why the Lions won't go to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I am inclined to agree. This is another scenario where I just think the only thing that can stop the Lions are probably themselves, you know, / injuries. But what's the point of trying to predict that? Come on. The Lions, you know, them finally being like a legit contender is still weird to me. And a lot of people might be tempted to say, hey, you know, same old Lions. But that's not any argument that I personally subscribe to. The fact that Jared Goff didn't even crack triple-digit yards and they won in a blowout. Granted, it was against the Titans, but the Titans do have a solid-ish defense. That just shows how fundamentally sound the Lions are, especially on defense and the forgotten art special teams. So, like I said, I really do think it's impressive that the offense doesn't necessarily have you firing on all cylinders for the rest of the team to pick up the slack, because usually there are some teams that are so dominant just on one area of the game where faltering anywhere else can cost them the game. The Lions are not that team. They're balance. And balance, that is your good friend come January.
Aaron?
Okay, so the Lions, okay. I know the Lions are, I was looking them up. And who did they lose to? Oh, that's right. Yeah, I was looking at who they lost to for a second. I forgot. But the Lions are pretty darn good team. It's kind of crazy that they're 6-1. I never thought I'd be saying that. But this is my theory, okay? I know they beat the Titans. They blew them out. I know they looked great a couple days ago. But I have seen it before, though, when teams will start to season out like crazy records like this. When it comes November, December, they tend to go downhill, and then they never get back to where they were. So my biggest concern with the Lions is that I hope they didn't peak too soon, because I've seen the Cardinals a few years ago. When they went 7-0, they looked crazy good, and all of a sudden it only took that one loss to the Packers. And then all of a sudden, they would just look very iffy after that. And then, they made the playoffs, though, but they just didn't look the same. So hopefully my biggest concern is that they didn't pick too soon. Because the NFC is a pretty good conference. Like, there's a lot of good teams. A lot of teams have winning records and such like that. So, that's what I got on the Lions.
Yeah, listen, they've been everything that I thought that they would be and more. Like I cite the 85 passing yards from Jared Goff as a good thing, because we know that he's capable of doing more than what he did. And it's not like he did that because of inefficient passing. He went 12 for 15 on passing. Those are pretty good passing numbers. Good accuracy. Overall, He can throw the ball very well, and we've seen him throw for 300-plus yards. It's not like he can't do that. So the fact that they were able to do this with minimal effort, all of the effort was spread. They distributed the wealth throughout this team to be able to drop 50-plus points. That means if any other players on this team are having off days, you can still end up winning the game because one player is going to have a really good day and, you know, take some of the pressure off and bail the rest of the team out. Let's say Jared Goff is having a bad game. He throws two picks. We know Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery can pick up the slack because we know they could run a very run dominant team. If the run game isn't working, they have Jameson Williams, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Jameson Williams soon, but Amon-Ra St. Brown, Sam Laporta. You have a good team, and I think the defense is its best days are ahead of him. So it's a well-oiled machine. You can't really find the weakness here. It's hard to find the weakness. That does bring me to final point just for a millisecond here before we move on to our final segment. Top three, bottom three for week eight. They did lose Aiden Hutchinson a couple weeks ago to a broken leg. And the trade deadline is coming up soon.
Next week.
Yes. So expect this team to be in the market for an edge rusher. This is arguably the best team so far, arguably the best Lions team in the history of its franchise. I say arguably, but why would they not go all in and try to fill in one of their few weaknesses on the team? Why would they not do that?
Oh, I got something to add with that, Adam. So if the Lions get an edge rusher, they should go get Hassan Reddick. I'll be down. I want him off the Jets. I don't want to see him no more. I'm done. I would glad
give one him. Game.
Yeah, I don't want to. I'm done. Enough. I'm done with that dude. I seen enough. I'll get rid of him today, like tonight. Like, yeah, I will give him to the Lions. That's what the Lions should do. They should be calling the Jets.
I've heard word of how they should go get Hassan Reddick. They should go get Max Crosby. I think Crosby might be a little bit more outlandish though, because he said he wants to be a Raider. And he fits that culture. I don't really see another team that Max Crosby would go to, but I mean, Hassan Reddick, I think would make a lot of sense, but the problem is that there is a clause in his contract that doesn't allow him to, it doesn't allow him to be traded to other NFC teams.
Oh yeah, it's right. I forget about that. Because if the Jets trade him there, then we give the Eagles like a 2026 second round pick or something. Yeah. Okay, never mind. Darn, man. Stupid Jets. Sorry. So, all right, continue, man.
Diana Russini tweeted over the weekend. She said Max Crosby, Myles Garrett, and Jeffrey Simmons are untouchable before the NFL trade deadline. And then in a second paragraph in the same tweet, well, on X, either way, you know what I'm talking about. I do expect the Panthers, Jadeveon Clowney, the Packers, Preston Smith, and a different Browns vet, Za'Darius Smith, to draw some interest before the deadline. A few veterans who over the past few years have been very good edge rushers who the Lions could call in and go out and grab. Because they'd be stupid to not try and plug in this one weakness. They'll probably be contenders next year when Aiden Hutchinson's back. But you'd also be crazy to not try to go all in on this season as well. Usually, making trades at the deadline does not take that early of a draft pick, especially for players like this who are veterans just looking to get that one ring before they retire. Preston Smith, Jadeveon Clowney, Za'Darius Smith. These are all veterans who shouldn't take that much draft capital. In fact, it should be a fifth or a sixth at most. The Lions should do that yesterday.
They'll make a move. They got till next Tuesday anyways.
I think so, yeah.
If they get Max Crosby, then that'll just break the NFL.
I really don't think they're going to get Max Crosby.
Honestly, that's not that crazy, actually. Because Max Crosby, he did say that he wants to win. So that makes sense. That's a good fit. And it's an NFC team. Yeah. Why not? I would do it.
Like, yeah, he wants to win, but he also wants to be a Raider for life. So you can't have 2-2, obviously.
I get what you're saying, though. But Saquon Barkley said that last year, too. I want to be a Giant for life. You know what he does? He turns around and goes to the Eagles.
Well, the Giants weren't willing to pay. Saquon, whereas the Raiders are more than likely to pay Max Crosby what he's worth.
If Crosby gets traded, and let's say the Raiders did make that an option, and the Lions offered up a day two pick, even let's say a day one pick, just for the exercise, a day one pick, so a first round pick for Max Crosby, I'd do that yesterday. Because not only does that, you may be trading for him to overpay for him, but go ahead and do it. Pay him. Then you have him and Hutchinson next year so that you'll have a ferocious defense to go along with this offense that you've had over this season so far. I do that.
And also, if that actually did happen, if Crosby went to the Lions, I can see Aiden Hutchinson and Max Crosby, second one guy, and high-fiving each other.
Sure.
Yeah.
A couple times.
That would be a legendary pick right there, man. That would be legendary.
Sure. Yeah, I'm sure they'll high-five a few times. All right. Move on to our next and final segment, the Week 8 top three, bottom three, best and worst performances from Week 8 slate of action. That's next. This is the Fumble Rooski Podcast. It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that 6th or 7th spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome back to the Fumble Rooski Podcast by Power 88 and Secret Weapon Consulting. Adam Wright, CJ Medeiros, Chris Kostic, special guest Aaron Wise. We have officially reached the final segment of the show. Every Tuesday, top three, bottom three, best and worst performances from Week 8 slate in action by Chris Kostic. Chris, floor is yours.
Top three, bottom three. We'll start with the Thursday night game from Week 8, the Rams and the Vikings. Rams being the top three. I mean, look, you get Puka and Kupp right back in your offense, and you're right back where you started. And now you're in a spot where you can make a playoff run again. I mean, the defense still is a little shaky, but this offense looks extremely scary again. The Rams are definitely going to find themselves in a wild card spot, that's for sure. Going to the next one, it's going to be a little bit of it's our first and only game that makes it to the top three, bottom three. On the top three, the Browns, the bottom three, the Ravens. I mean, the Ravens just losing to the Browns in general alone is enough to be on the bottom three. And to add into the fact that they lost to Jameis Winston as well, really kind of hammers that point home. On the Browns side, I mean, it's their first game without Deshaun Watson. I said this on Friday. It's either they're going to have a ton of energy and amazing vibes now that Jameis is in, along with that, this is the second game Nick Chubb is back, or they're just going to get dog walked by the Ravens. And, well, they had a ton of energy coming into this game, and boy, did Jameis Winston deliver, considering he went 27 for 41, 334, 3 touchdowns. Cedric Tillman, everyone forgot this guy existed, 7 catches, 99 yards, and 2 touchdowns, including the go-ahead touchdown to take the lead. And now Jameis isn't the greatest quarterback in the world, but he is an amazing locker room guy. And that alone is honestly a reason enough that the Browns were going to win this game. And also provided 2 amazing interviews, pregame and postgame, of this game as well. Almost like he was reenacting lines that he had practiced in the mirror prior to the game. Like he was about to shoot like the most important movie scene of his life. So awesome. Jameis Winston.
He definitely practiced that in the mirror.
Oh, yeah.
He did. Jameis Winston for president. I'm putting that in the write-in. You can hold me to that.
Not Drake May.
And Drake May. Drake May for president. Jameis for Drake for president. Jameis for vice president. There you go. Where you go, Jameis for president and Drake for vice.
Drake is not vice. Give me Drake.
All right. Last team on the top three, the Eagles. Just mopping the floor with the Bengals in this game. And the Bengals having a really good offense and the Eagles not having the greatest defense. And they only let up 17 points. While a Eagles offense that has kind of struggled in weeks past to kind of get stuff going. I mean, yeah, they won 28-3 against the Giants. They also beat the Browns 20-16. They needed a big beatdown game on a pretty competent team. So I think that the Eagles are a good candidate for the last spot in the top three. Going back to the bottom three, the Colts. Now, the Colts just made the decision today to bench Anthony Richardson. And basically, the only reason why they're on the bottom three is the fact that they've stuck with Anthony Richardson this whole time. And I'm sorry, he's just not a good quarterback. Like 10 for 32, sacked five times, one interception. The only thing he has in his bag is his deep ball. He takes himself out of games, which I'm sorry, Anthony Richardson should never start a game ever again. As a quarterback, you never take yourself out of a game for any fucking reason. And yeah, at Florida, CJ said this kid was a project's project. And even then, I don't know why anyone would even take a chance on him just based off of what we saw him do in Florida.
Yeah, he may not even be that old. He might genuinely. And he just got benched for this week. So
yeah, Joe Flacco now the starter. Speaking of really terrible quarterback play, the Jets highlight the last spot in our bottom three. Aaron Rodgers is bad. The Jets, everyone thought that the Jets of right now was what Brady and the Bucks were going to be in 21. So everyone can go fuck themselves. Look, it goes all the way from Woody Johnson being a terrible owner to Aaron Rodgers being a dickhead, to Hassan Reddick being a jackass and deciding that it's a good idea to lose $800,000 every week because he doesn't want to play, all the way down to the team keeping Greg Zuerlein, who I think his over under is 0.5 on missed field goals from now on. Should be 2.5 because that's how shitty of a kicker he is. This is a team that lacks discipline, lacks any sort of drive. They wasted three timeouts in the first quarter, all three of their timeouts in the first quarter. Way too many times where Aaron Rodgers is dilly-dallying himself up to the line of scrimmage to change the play or adjust their alignment or whatever, to the point where they fucked up their two-point conversion and got a delay of game, and the ensuing play was a diddly-ass slant route to Mike Williams at the three-yard line that got swarmed by the Patriots. And on top of that, you lost to the motherfucking Patriots. And as a Patriots fan, also, honorable mention to the bottom three is you two jackasses for clowning me for picking the Pats this week. And my reason was fuck the Jets. That's why.
You didn't even give a good reason as to why they're going to lose.
Exactly. Fuck the Jets.
I knew the Jets were going to lose that game. I knew we're losing that game. I picked against them too. I knew we're losing that game, man. We're the damn Jets.
It's the same old Jets that I've grown up watching for the last 23 and about to be 24 years of living. It will never change, and it will always be the same. And the only reason why it'll change is if Woody Johnson sells the team.
I don't know what they should change because this is a franchise-long issue. They can't get out of their own way. They've had a little bit, like just some small subsections of success during their time. There was back-to-back AFC championship appearances with Mark Sanchez. They won a Super Bowl like way back.
The third one ever, actually.
It's crazy that Mark Sanchez and the Jets is the best Jets team that they've had in the last 10 years.
It's just unbelievable how bad that this team
Chris,
is with the level of play that with the level of talent that they have. It's just it's unreal. And I will fully admit that I believed this Jets team would be competitive, and it makes me want to put a paper bag over my head. Just thinking
Aaron should be the one with the paper bag over his head.
Hold on,
Chris. I want to do a quick fact check here on you. But by the way, the fact check proves your point. You said the best Jets team the last 10 years is when they had.
I meant 15 because I.
Okay, I was going to say. Nope, that was longer than 10 years ago. Yep. The best team the New York Jets have had in the past 10 years was that weird, fluky Ryan Fitzpatrick season where they still didn't go to the playoffs. And you know what? I said this in the chat and I'll say it now. Aaron Rodgers is officially out of excuses. He killed his head coach, had him literally chucked. He had him chucked into the Meadowlands where the Wolves probably got him. And it's like, no, Aaron Rodgers isn't a coach killer. Oh, come on. That is such BS. Did you hear Aaron Rodgers say, I had nothing to do with it? Man, sounded like he was talking to a federal judge. You know those lines were rehearsed. And literally, like, what's it going to take? And by the way, I can already hear these Diddy-loving Aaron Rodgers fans all like, you do realize that he doesn't have health. That's what they said in his career. So what's it now? He has Davante Adams. He has Breece Hall. He has Garrett Wilson. And he even has these smaller role guys like Alan Lazard, Mike Williams, Braylon Allen, and Tyler Conklin. They did a lot to fix the offensive line, and they have a top 10 defense. Literally, what's it going to take? This is a Rodgers thing. I said we need to pump the brakes on the Jets. I said I wasn't sold on Aaron Rodgers, and this is precisely why. Because at his core, Aaron Rodgers is cancer. He is a petulant man-child. And back in the day, you know, when he was being a diva, he was still winning MVPs. So you had to let it slide. But guess what? His days of winning MVP are gone. He is a geriatric, or at least in the football sense, geriatric game manager. And you know what you do with cancer? You cut it out. Aaron Rodgers' career is over. Just fling him into the Meadowlands and tell him to go join Sala. Because I got nothing. Like, there is no way to fix a team with Aaron Rodgers on it. The only saving grace is for the Jets, you might pick high enough to pick his replacement.
Or
No, we won't.
Rodgers leaves and he becomes a Viking, just like the former Packers quarterback. Then they'll be in business.
Okay. I got something to add. This is what's gonna happen with the Jets. This is what they always freaking do. The fuck the fans. Sorry for my language. This is what they always do. I already know what's gonna happen. This is what's gonna happen. Okay, we might win Thursday night. The whole Jets press. Oh man, we're good, guys. We're back. And then next week we get blown to smithereens, which is on Sunday Night Football. And then this is what this Jets is going to happen. They're going to lose three games in a row, right? Lose three games in a row until we're mathematically eliminated. And all these quarterbacks coming to like Charter Sanders, all these quarterbacks, man, that we need. You know what the Jets are going to do? They're going to win too many games and then fuck us. And then now we have nothing. And now we got to like figure something out. That's what they always do. We're screwed. And even the Jets do get the number one pick somehow, which I doubt, we're going to ruin the quarterback anyway. So either way, we're done. We are screwed. We are screwed. Either way, I have no confidence, man. Dude, my confidence is shot. It's shot. And that Patriots game last Sunday, man, was not a football game. That was a clown show. I was laughing. I was like, I can't believe we're really about to lose the Patriots, man. Like, literally, that first touchdown when Drake May scored a touchdown, he wasn't even running that fast. He jogged, yo. He jogged that shit in the end zone.
I think that's the other craziest part about this loss is that the Jets cheap shotted Drake May and brought in Brissett and they still lost. Mm-hmm. They still lost to Jacoby Brissett.
Yeah. Oh. And here's another two, man. I got to go on the Jets, okay? All right. I'm sick and tired of hearing how great Sauce Gardner is. He's so overrated. He never catches picks. Now he's getting burned by some randoms. I don't know what that – he's getting burned.
He's like, getting it's burned. Sad. He's getting burnt by a guy with the last name of Booty. That's what it is.
Yeah, yeah. He got burnt like that. That one play when he got burnt by Booty, he fell to the ground and then tried to act like nothing happened. And then Garrett Wilson can't catch now. Like, I don't know what's going on. It's just we're done. We're 2-6. It's over. I'm tired. Things got so bad, and I've never done this as a fan. I had to block the Jets on social media for a while. I didn't want to see Instagram shit. I don't want to see how great Aaron Rodgers is. I'm sick and tired of seeing Aaron Rodgers' little stupid little throws. Like, oh, we got Devontae Adams. Oh, we got Hassan. I don't want to hear it. I had to block the Jets. I blocked all the beat writers. I had to block Rich Cimini. I had to block Connor Hughes. I couldn't. I didn't want to see it no more. Okay, the Jets broke me, man. Bro, they broke me, man. I got to take a break. I can't see it no more. I can't take it. Okay? And then I start filing more Celtics stuff because I was trying to get some positive energy. The Jets broke me, man. I'm done with Aaron Rodgers. He can go. Go get out of here. And Aaron Rodgers, man, you're a joke, bro. He out here saying, oh man, I'm in the darkness, man. Yes, you are. You are in the darkness. And I hate to say it too. Okay. This is what's gonna happen this Thursday night. Aaron Rodgers, this will be the game where he'll be known as the Jets, as the vintage moment. Remember last year when Tim Boyle had that fail Hail Mary? That's what he's known for now. Okay, couldn't reach the end zone, gets picked off, running that shit back to the foot of the touchdown. Oh, Black Friday! Okay, and then Mark Sanders' butt fumble. We'll never forget about that, sadly, on Thanksgiving Day. And Aaron Rodgers, I don't know what he's going to do, but he's going to do some funny shit, too, on Thursday night, on a spooky day, and he's going to be on for that, too. Oh, one more thing, too. Sam Darnold, remember that game? Remember that 4-interception game against the Patriots? Oh, I'm seeing ghosts. You know Aaron Rodgers is going to be known for something funny, too. You know it's happening. You know it's coming. It's not over yet. Once that happens, it's a cherry on top for the season. You know it's happening.
I'm glad we were able to get that rant in. I knew amongst all of us shitting on the Jets, I really wanted to get Aaron to admit that this season is over for them.
No.
It's an admission.
No. It is done. It is done. Okay. Okay. And I'm tired. And I'm tired of these fans continuing on. Oh, no. We're still in this, guys. We still could get it. No, we're done. Aaron Rodgers quit. The whole team quit. They quit. Dude, ever since that Pittsburgh game, I watched, let's see, the first quarter and a half. Ever since Aaron Rodgers had a second pick, I said, fuck the Jets. I'm done. I hate this team. I'm done. I shut the game off. I had to go on the walk for a while outside in the dark. Listen to some music, you know, try to watch some Celtics highlights, something. Okay, come back inside. Let's see if the game's better. No, it's even worse. Okay, It's over. We're always going to be the Jets. And I realize, too, even when we do break things up, right, we'll always be the Jets. We're always going to be – sorry, I'm all over the place right now. Roger Kandel, this is what you need to do. You need to take the Jets off the Colts in the Jets Senate football game. Please do. I'm tired of getting embarrassed, man. To take us off Senate football, man. I don't want to see – the Jets don't deserve primetime games. And the fact they're favored, one-point favor against the Texans, insane. Anyways, never mind.
All right.
As bad as this Jets team was, in the Patriots, I feel like we talk so much now about how bad the Jets are that we just completely forget that the Jets were bad in this game, that the Patriots were bad in this game too. The amount of drops that we saw from the Pats in their wide receiving court, oof, made me sick to my stomach. Seeing the way that this wide receiver room talks off the field is egregious. And I'm sorry. I know that we're all going to say that the hit on Drake May was dirty, which it was illegal. It was an illegal hit. You're not going to get any sort of disagreement from me there.
Oh, boy.
I know you were about to say something.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to say it anyway.
I swear I'm about to tell you to shut the fuck up.
I can already hear. Late slide. He slid.
What else do you want to do?
It was a late slide. That's all I'm saying.
He slid. Oh, like, so what?
He slid. It's better than what Tua does.
It's not, because he got knocked out of the concussion.
Tua's brain damaged ass goes forward. But Drake May slid, and it doesn't literally. And look, I get it, smart with the ball, but still, it doesn't change with the douche nozzle Jets fan, Jets guy there, who's all just like, hey, I'm just gonna, just lean with the crown of my head and see where that goes. And the selective outrage of this is nuts. And I'll tell you why. Because if this happened to Mahomes, Jamie and Sherwood would be thrown in the same cell that Diddy is.
It was a late slide. I'm
it
not.
It wasn't wrong. Late. It wasn't late.
It was late. You
it wasn't come late.
On. It was very late. It was extremely late. Literally last second, as he knew he was getting tackled, he goes, okay, I'm going to go down. Dude, I'd rather you be safe than take those extra yards and then the last second go, oh shit, now I need to slide. As somebody's about is leading in, diving at you, now you go into slide. That made no sense.
He's supposed to see that the guy's coming in head first. He saw two guys in front of him and he slid and didn't see the guy that was diving in head first behind him. What else do you want Drake to do?
He saw him and then he slid, which is like you have
to. And then the guy dove in head first. It's
the guy was literally going to like try to take him out, like regardless.
I agree. I'm just saying, like, you have to anticipate that a little earlier. I'd rather he slide a few yards early than get everything you could possibly get, and then at the very last second go and slide, because you're the quarterback. You need to make sure that you are not taking any unnecessary hits. I think two things are true at once. I think that was a bad hit. That was an ugly hit. At the same time, I want to see him slide a little bit earlier than that. I think there are two things that are true at once there. That's all.
Whatever.
Okay, my turn. All right. Sure. So top three, whatever.
We
did.
We've kind of gone away from reviewing these teams at this point. We've kind of just been shitting on both the Jets and the Pats.
Yeah. No, I ain't gonna lie though. I had to run the Jets, man. I've been going a rampage lately with the Jets, man. I lost it, man. I lost it. Everybody has a breaking point, even me. Okay, and I'm. Even me, I don't think I told you guys this. I think you guys probably saw my story probably about a year ago, but I don't have Zach Wilson's jersey no more. I burned it. It was a funeral.
I've seen a lot of burned Aaron Rodgers jerseys on social
media. I'm done with him. Dude, the Jet fans are turning on him. If Aaron Rodgers throws one airmail pass, if he throws one airmail pass, screw that. The Jet fans won't show up. They won't show up. It'll be all tickets. But if I'm a season ticket holder, I'm getting all my tickets and I'm giving away. Here, you got them for free. I don't want to show up. I ain't gonna show up. I was watching at home and if we lose, we lose. At least we lose, and I don't lose money over it. I mean, you are losing money, but still. But yeah, man, it's done, man. I don't know where we go from here, man. See, no, I'm sick and tired of seeing. Let's see, the Patriots, man, because you know the Patriots can be good again because they always figure out a way to be good somehow. But the Jets always suck. The Dolphins are – okay, the Dolphins kind of bad this year. But the Bills are good. They figured out that the Patriots are going to figure out some way, somehow. The Dolphins figured it out, even though they're not good this year. The Jets always suck. We always suck. We always suck. I don't know what it is. Aaron Rodgers is contaminated with the green. He's contaminated. We could bring Mahomes in here. He'll be bad. We could bring
believe it at this point.
No, I'll be straight. Honestly, man, things have gotten so bad that if I play on the Broncos against the Jets, I might be able to beat the Jets. Bo Nix did it by throwing 61 yards. You're telling me I can't throw a few passes, some few 10-yard passes and run a little bit? Like literally, I could jog and get 20 yards somehow. Drake May did it. He jogged it. Took the touchdown. I couldn't believe it.
Things have gotten so bad. Aaron is literally demanding put me in there.
Yes, it's that bad, dude. I can beat the Jets somehow. Okay, I have a noodle arm now. Okay, I'm like Tim Tebow 2.0, and I'm somehow, some way winning the game.
At least you.
How? I mean, yeah. I got the speed though, but the throwing man, I don't know what happened. I used to. I'm not gonna. I used to play flag football. I don't know if that really counts as playing quarterback. Okay, but yeah, I know it don't count. It's not pads. It's flags. But yeah, I do got the speed. So I could be like a Tyler Huntley / Tim Tebow. But yeah, that's all I got to say with the Jets, man. That's enough ranting. But yeah.
All right. I think we've talked this to death. Both of our teams that we're a fan of stink. It's fun to talk about all the teams around the league. It was fun going over the Ravens, the Lions, the Texans. Jaden Daniels versus Caleb Williams has been a fun race to cover. But I long for the year that the Patriots are back in contention. I'd be lying if I said I wasn't a little upset with how behind we are in this rebuild. 6 years since Tom Brady left. And here we are still talking about how we're a couple years off from contention. It's pretty bad. All right. Well, that'll do it for us tonight. Thank you for listening to us. We have new episodes out on Tuesdays at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And Fridays at 5, be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel. We also have all our episodes available on Spotify, Spreaker, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, and so much more. Also, be sure to follow our Instagram at FumbleRooski_podcast and our TikTok at FumbleRooskiPod to keep up with our podcast and the latest coverage on the NFL. Otherwise, we'll see you next week. Over and out.